This week on the Writer's Detective Bureau, mass shooting aftermath, partners, and inside a detective office. I'm Adam Richardson, and this is the Writer's Detective Bureau. Welcome to episode number 49 of the Writer's Detective Bureau, the podcast dedicated to helping authors and screenwriters write professional quality crime-related fiction. This week, I'd like to thank my Gold Shield patrons, Deborah Dunbar from deborahdunbar.com, CC Jameson from ccjameson.com, Larry Keaton, Vicky Tharp of vickytharp.com, Dharma Kelleher of dharmakelleher.com, Chris Ann, who is Chris Ann Creates on Twitter, and Jimmy Coe of crimmybox.com for their support. I'd also like to thank my newest Coffee Club patron, Larry Darter, for pledging his support, as well as all of my longtime Coffee Club patrons for their support month after month. And special thanks to Marco Caracari for upping his monthly pledge. You can find links to all of the writers supporting this episode by going to the show notes at writersdetective.com/49. And to learn about setting up your own Patreon account for your author business, visit writersdetective.com/Patreon, Patreon. As I record this, it is July 5th, 2019, and I am stunned at how quickly this year, even the last few weeks, have flown by. We are already in the second half of 2019. Now, this week has been especially busy for me, and I have admittedly lagged in getting the June APB email out on time. So if you are an APB email list subscriber, expect it to hit your inbox on Saturday, July 6th. Speaking of which, sending out a monthly mailing list on the last day of the month was not one of my smarter ideas. So this upcoming email is actually going to be titled the July APB rather than June. So you're not going to be missing one. It's just going to, you know, henceforth, they're going to arrive the first-ish day of the month and be appropriately named for that month. I know this sounds logical now, and I apologize for taking so long to get this sorted out. If you aren't on the APB, you can join by going to writersdetective.com/mailing list. And one of the things that has my head rattling around right now is putting the finishing touches on my upcoming book, The Writer's Detective Handbook, Criminal Investigation for Authors and Screenwriters. The ebook version is currently up for presale, but rest assured, yes, there will be a print version. Since this is a reference book and some of us require longer arms for reading, I'll put it that way, I am working on making it available in a large print format since, you know, most bookstores won't allow me to shrink wrap a free pair of reading glasses to the cover. The joys of getting older. So I will let you know when that becomes available for presale, the print version. And those of you that subscribed to the APB and opted in to help with the book, you will be getting a sneak peek from me in the, I want to say early August, the very beginning of August. So to pre-order the Kindle ebook, you can go to writersdetectivebureau.com/book. And I will let you know when the presale for the printed book is up. All right, now on to this week's questions. I have the best patrons. They show up week after week with questions for me. And this week's first question comes from Coffee Club patron Amanda Fairbend from amandafairbend.com. Amanda asks, what are the policies and procedures for handling the aftermath of a mass shooting event? Who investigates the crime? Is it a team effort between local detectives, FBI, DHS, etc.? If it's in Georgia, would the GBI get involved? Now, GBI stands for Georgia Bureau of Investigation. In my work in progress, the shooter escapes before police can arrest him, so there is a concern about more attacks occurring. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Amanda, and thank you for the question. More often than not, the response and the investigation are the local agency's responsibility. as chaotic and awful as mass shootings are, and I don't say this to be flippant, they're really just a homicide investigation. Now, of course, they're really big ones, all with the same suspect, most likely, but still just a homicide investigation. And I can hear your plot crafting brain clicking right now from my saying most likely. But similar to the scenario I talked about last episode relating to bioterrorism, in your scenario, Amanda, you have the investigation of what happened, and then you also have the hunt for the killer. So depending on where you set your story in Georgia, your local agency could get overwhelmed pretty quickly just in responding to the shooting and processing the scene and interviewing witnesses and all that stuff, much less the hunt for the killer that's still on the loose. So if it's like in Atlanta proper, Atlanta PD would probably have enough personnel to effectively manage that kind of scene. But if it's in the suburbs, the police department will likely need help. And even without asking, they would probably get officers and deputies from the nearby cities and counties responding to that scene. Given what I know about the GBI, I think it's pretty accurate to assume that they could be called in to assist with the crime scene investigation and potentially help with the rest of the case. The same goes for the FBI. Given the GBI's CSI capabilities, man, that's a lot of alphabet soup. So given the Georgia Bureau of Investigation's crime scene investigation capabilities with their crime lab stuff, I would expect GBI to take the lead on the crime scene investigation. And then the FBI, if they were called in, would help with resources in the manhunt, especially as it relates to tracking down leads outside of the immediate area and doing what they can to prevent the suspect from fleeing the country. But again, this would still be the local police department's case, and the GBI and FBI would be there to assist. They would not, in all probability, take over the case like you always see done on TV. And then also in our Facebook group, Amanda, I saw that you posted a question about what the police would do with the witnesses they needed to interview. And I know you referenced my previous podcast episode where I talked about how city buses were brought in to transport witnesses in the San Bernardino terrorism case. Now, there isn't a set protocol that I know of for how you would move them or where you would have to take them. This is where you as the writer get to put on your role-playing hat and ask yourself, what would you do if you were the detective or the responding officer or supervisor? The things to consider are, where are we? What options do I have available? What are my logistical needs? Let's say I have 100 witnesses that need to be interviewed. What are you going to do with that? So in the case of San Bernardino, they just kind of commandeered. They called the bus company and said, can you send us a bunch of buses? So let's say it's 100 witnesses. Give me three city buses, and send them to this intersection. And I'm going to start loading my witnesses onto there. When you have the suspect on the loose and you've got the media coming, they're going to want to interview anyone that they can about this incident. My immediate thought process is I need to, first of all, protect my witnesses, of course, but I need to segregate all of the witnesses from the general public to make sure they don't wander off, losing our chance at ever talking to them, and to make sure that we get their statement before the media does. The next thing would be keeping them all in one place, so that way we can address all of their concerns and then we can address ours as well. So my concern as the detective is to keep everyone from talking about what they saw, did, said, or whatever until after they've been interviewed. When witnesses start talking to each other about their experiences, it has a tendency to change what was or wasn't actually recalled when it comes time to do the interview. And what I mean by this is the witnesses, in their attempt to help us with the investigation, may, without realizing it, offer details they heard but didn't actually witness for themselves. And this can create all sorts of problems, especially if that detail isn't actually accurate. And of course, their concerns will be connecting with loved ones to let them know that they're all right, or checking on other loved ones that may have been involved in the incident as well, while still keeping the integrity of the interview process. And then, of course, finding a place that can handle all of this that is nearby, that's available and capable of handling this many people immediately. And what other concerns are we dealing with? Are we dealing with the heat of summer, the cold of winter? Schools are probably on lockdown, so that may limit our options. I'd start thinking about where I could move 100 people right now. I'd start thinking about a movie theater, a community center, a school gymnasium that's nearby if it isn't on lockdown. And I'm looking for single places that I can put all of these people because I want them to be easily secured. I want them to have seating for everyone. I want to have an adequate number of restrooms. Someone should be from the police department, or it could be one of the other response agencies. It could even be Red Cross or the fire department, but someone should be assigned to arrange for food and water to be brought in. Someone from the department needs to be the point of contact between the witnesses and their family members. You're going to get flooded with phone calls asking about their family member. So you need to have some sort of plan for dealing with that. And all of this needs to get done post haste, because the issue of the witnesses is much bigger than having enough detectives with enough pens, papers, and recording devices to get every interview. So I hope this helps, and I would love to hear what you come up with, Amanda. You can find Amanda's work at amandafairbend.com, and the link to her website is in the show notes at writersdetective.com/49. And the next two questions come from my coffee club patron, Marco Caracari. Thanks again for upping your pledge, Marco. I really appreciate it. So Marco writes, "Hi, Adam. Thanks again for your previous help. I have a few questions about the LAPD and homicide. I was told by the LAPD public info desk that homicide detectives no longer have assigned partners and work primarily solo, but that temporary partners may be assigned depending on the cases. I still see many shows and books showing partnerships, but is that out of date if one wants to stay current and realistic?" And Marco's next question is, "Where is the best place to find photos or videos of the inside of robbery homicide or a similar LAPD division to get an idea of what LA police departments look like, style, decor, etc.? Thank you very much and have a fantastic week, Marco." Thanks for the questions, Marco. As for the partner question, I think the key words in that response from LAPD are assigned partners. They probably keyed off of that because at LAPD, the majority of the patrol cars are staffed by assigned partners. You always work with the same partner. Or not always, but you have an assigned partner. So detectives are not that way. And honestly, most police agencies do not formally assign partners. When I worked in my department's major crimes unit, we did not have formally assigned partners. Now, we had a squad, which ironically was an odd number of detectives most of the time, so you couldn't really be partnered up. Somebody would be short one. But the reality is you would partner up with whomever you wanted or whomever was available at the time that you needed someone to go along with you for something, whether that was an interview or whatever. But from a storytelling perspective, this actually affords you the chance to have multiple characters playing off of your protagonist in dialogue. And this can be huge when it comes to providing insight into a character or situation. Using Stephen Pressfield's B speaks for A concept, which is an article I linked to in the May APB email. I'll also provide that link in the show notes. It's at stephenpressfield.com, but the link will be at writersdetective.com/49. Anyway, in Pressfield's B speaks for A article, he explains the storytelling tactic and the power behind the tactic of using a second character to reflect back the thoughts, perceptions, observations, etc. of the primary character. This avoids the trap of too much exposition by your main character. So it gives you, the writer, a way to have those key things provided to your reader or viewer through believable dialogue with that secondary character. Now, this will make more sense if you read Pressfield's article. So to bring it back to why having multiple partners is a good thing, and don't take that out of context, is that you can have different B's speaking for A or a C speaking for A, which can mean different perspectives on the same thing. When you move your characters from one place to another, like going from the crime scene back to the office, that's not something you would necessarily write about. But if you need to convey something, you can create a short dialogue in the car driving scene to get that info across to your reader, but do so only if that dialogue is actually moving your plot and story forward. But anyway, then when you need a new perspective on things added to the mix, you can bring in a different character partner for that dialogue. And it can be as simple as character C catching a ride back to the office with A for a 4-paragraph conversation and dialogue. It really helps if you know your secondary characters well and what they bring to your protagonist's understanding. So if character A is your protagonist and B is his or her preferred partner, so they're friends and they have strengths and weaknesses that complement one another, you know, a traditional partnership, consider making character C a partner that has a different working relationship with A. Maybe C is a straight shooter that is indifferent to A's feelings or is not afraid of saying something that might otherwise disrupt a friendship. Or perhaps C is less hardened emotionally speaking, like they're an empath, and they picked up something from an interview that A missed because C is the better one at reading people. So still feel free to partner up A and B often as if they were formally assigned, but use the fact that it isn't a formal assignment as freedom in your storytelling to add to the story pace and perspective through the use of an additional partner or partners. As for finding the best place to find photos or videos of RHD, the Robbery Homicide Division of LAPD, or anywhere for that matter, the answer, of course, is always online. I know that isn't much help, right? So my first suggestion is to improve the way that you're searching online. So the first tactic is using Google's alerts feature. So if you go to google.com/alerts, A-L-E-R-T-S, you can set up a search string for LAPD RHD. Now, you might not want to add one for LAPD robbery homicide, since that will give you millions of hits that are not specific to RHD. But if you do, make sure there's a hyphen between the words robbery and homicide and put LAPD robbery homicide in quotes. And the same goes for LAPD RHD. And we'll talk about that in a second. You might also add your author name and book title to your Google Alerts as well. And what will happen is you'll get an email. Now, I set my alerts to a daily digest to avoid getting a ton of emails every day. But you'll get an email alerting you whenever Google finds a new result for those search terms. The other thing I suggest is learning how to use advanced search engine searching. That's quite a mouthful, right? So this will really pare down your search results. Go to google.com/advanced_search. You can also just Google advanced search and it should come up as the top result. But that page, google.com/advanced_search, you'll get an easy to use tool for getting better search results. So as an example, you can restrict your search term of RHD to LAPD's website. You enter your search term, in this case, RHD, into the Find Pages with All These Words box at the top of the screen, then scroll down to then narrow these results by site or domain and enter lapdonline.org in that box. That's the LAPD official website. And then click Enter. You will then be taken to that all too familiar Google search results page. But before you start scrolling down through the results, take a look at the search bar at the top of your page. It should say RHD site colon LAPDonline.org. And there's no space between site, the colon, and then the website name. You've just learned the syntax for how to search a specific website for a keyword without having to go to that advanced search page. So if you wanted to see how many pages on the Writer's Detective website references interrogations, on the old regular old Google page, you can enter interrogations site colon writersdetective.com and you will see every page that talks about interrogations on my website. So I urge you to play around with the advanced search page on Google, especially how to narrow down your search results and learn how to do those searches right from the normal search box using the correct syntax. So in Marco's case, you can even tell it to look for only photos or only video. Which brings me to my last tip. Think macro to find micro results. I'm guessing few, if any, I mean, this would probably be a security issue, any like real estate listing type photos of the RHD offices are actually online. I mean, nobody came in with a 360 pano camera and did like a beautiful photo of what the office looks like. So Google probably isn't going to show you a panoramic view of the office interior. However, police departments are constantly in the news. So start looking for photos and videos of news interviews of people associated with those units, the agencies or the locations, and start paying attention to the background to find what you need. You'll probably feel like Deckard and Blade Runner saying enhance, enhance, but you will probably find some pretty worthwhile detail by paying attention to the background in those interviews or in those photo features. So for you, Marco, in the show notes, I've included recent footage of an LAPD RHD captain doing an interview on LA's NBC4 News in the RHD offices at the PAB. And I'm sure you'll be shocked to know that it's just another office with a bullpen of low-walled cubicles. So find the link in the show notes to that video, and the show notes page is writersdetective.com/49. Thank you again for those questions, Marco. Thank you so much for listening this week. Now, my challenge to you this week is this. Send me the one question you've always wanted to ask a cop, but were too embarrassed to ask. Just go to writersdetective.com/podcast to send it in, and you can even do so anonymously if you're really that embarrassed to ask. And before we go, the link one more time to the pre-sale of the Writer's Detective Handbook, Criminal Investigation for Authors and Screenwriters, is writersdetectivebureau.com/book. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week and write well.